Here's the story of how you can win a trip for two to LA to visit the iconic Brady Bunch house. Not only visit the home, but spend the day there exploring and brunching with members of the Brady Bunch cast. If you remember, Kristen, Michelle, and I had the time of our lives when we got to visit the home back in September. It was truly a magical experience. And now you can have an experience like that too, alongside cast members from the show. Simply visit thebradyexperience.com to enter the Brady Brunch sweepstakes. And from now through January 31st, PCPS listeners can get four entries for the price of one. All you have to do is put PCPS in the add order note section of the shopping cart. And the goodness doesn't stop there. For every 10 purchases you make, you'll have the opportunity to tour the house on your very own. Just remember to put PCPS in the add order note section of your shopping cart. You can feel good knowing that a portion of your purchase goes to No Kid Hungry, a campaign to help end childhood hunger in America. So get those entries in and cross your fingers. Good luck, everybody.
And can't you picture the wife, like when he marries Mrs. Claus, when he finds, is she like, yes. Jane? Isn't her name,
her name
Jane
is Jessica.
Jessica. Oh, yeah, sorry, Jessica.
Yeah, and then her bosom gets bigger and bigger as the show goes on.
How on earth does she stand up? I mean, it's like a weeble. It's like, how does she, would I guess, bounce right back up?
Hello world, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the Big Wheel generation who know exactly what degree Mr. Heat Miser is. I mean, come on, it's Mr. 101.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we're saving the stories and songs and characters that have held a place in our hearts for decades that we all bring out each year to wrap around us like Linus's blanket in a countdown of your top 10 holiday specials.
I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
I'm Mr. Green Christmas. I'm Mr. Sun. Mr. Heat Blister, I'm Mr. 101. They call me Heat Miser. Whatever I touch starts to melt in my clutch. I'm too much.
Oh my gosh, you guys, that could easily be an anthem of our generation.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It is. It's like our, I'm trying to think of like a boomer example, but I can't think of it. It's like our Rolling Stones. Basically, our Heat Miser is our Rolling Stone.
But it's like just another one of those songs that connects us all.
It does. Every single person knows what it is.
I know. I love it so much. Mm-hmm. The holiday specials from our youth are part of our DNA now, I think. Really.
I think so. Oh, yeah.
Because these songs and stories and characters and the voices, especially mm-hmm. the voices,
oh, yes.
they all elicit feelings in us as adults that stemmed from the thrill of watching them once a year.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And don't you guys think that made them more powerful?
150%.
Oh, 151%.
Yes. Yes. 152.
Yes. Because we had to savor it. You don't get mm-hmm. everything you want whenever you want it. It's special.
Right.
No well, one I know got up we, to go to the bathroom.
Oh, God, no.
Only
no.
during the commercials. And even then not, because the commercials were so good during all of those, too.
That's
so,
all the stuff you wanted for Christmas.
Yes, exactly.
Like, mm-hmm. Baby Alive commercials.
That's right.
Yeah. Racetracks.
I'm doing it right now.
And this isn't a new topic for us listeners. We've touched on all of the Rankin Bass shows and the variety shows a few times in past Christmas episodes. But today we're doing something we've not done yet. And that is ranking your favorites. I'm so excited.
Yes, I know.
And we're going to end with the number one holiday special as chosen by friends of the Pop Culture Preservation Society.
Woo-hoo!
I'm giddy.
Woohoo!
Oh, me too.
I know.
Me too.
I know. So as we have done many times over the past 4 years, we asked our followers on social media to tell us their top one, two, or three favorite holiday shows. And as they have done many, many times, they gave us many, many more.
Sometimes that's okay. Not playing by the rules.
No, but we that's get okay. It. We understand.
We don't always play by the rules either, looking
you
at
you. You have feelings.
Kristen.
You need to express yourself.
That's right.
Okay, but before we get started with the countdown, let me ask each of you the same question, basically, that I asked our social media followers. Which is your very favorite? Like, if you could only watch one of these memorable shows for the rest of your life, which one would it be?
I think this is a great, this is another icebreaker for if you go to the party,
totally.
Instead of saying, what do you do? This is another great icebreaker. And I take it even one step further because there was a point with my family where, you know, everybody's grown up. We don't have any more children. And so your holiday can look different. And I wanted to ask my people, okay, finish this sentence for me. It's not Christmas without fill in the blank. And so I'm not talking about shows. I'm talking about anything.
I
must
that.
Do this at Christmas or it's not my holiday. And so I thought about this very seriously as if I was some kind of scholar.
Oh,
and
yeah.
My answer to that question is it's not Christmas without Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
It just isn't.
The music, the images, the visual you get in your mind, the feeling you get when Linus does the gospel according to Luke. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of that. And I'm not like a super religious person, but
it doesn't
I just
matter.
Remember. Yeah. I know, but do you guys remember if you grew up going to church at Christmas and we're Episcopalian, so sort of like I'm sure you get the same gospel if you're like Catholic or Lutheran or whatever. But do you guys remember the thrill when you were old enough and you, because you always tune out the gospel, the sermon,
yes,
everything.
Right.
Boring. The thrill you got when all of a sudden I was probably coloring on the back of like a Bible or something. And all of a sudden I realized, wait, I know those words. I know those words.
Is he holding a blanket?
Yes. And you could connect that. Wait a minute. That's what Linus says.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh gosh. You're so right. Well, in terms of what I would have to watch, if I could only watch one, I'm going with, I guess this wasn't really a TV special, but this is one that I watched with my family growing up and I watch with my kids now. And that's It's a Wonderful Life. That will always be It's Not Christmas Without for me. And I think because I'm thinking now as an adult, as a, you know, almost 60-year-old. God
Not
almighty.
Almost. You just turned 59.
This is true, I
Don't
guess.
Don't do
That's
that
true.
Yet. Don't start okay. saying almost.
Yes. Okay. As a young 59-year-old, I mean, I'm thinking, what would I want to be stuck with? Like, if I could only choose one, what would it be? And I just think, like, this has so many moments and themes that I wouldn't get tired of it, where I don't want to get tired of Rudolph or any of those. And again, as we've talked about in many of our TV watching episodes, is that my dad didn't sit down to watch a lot of TV with us. I think I said MASH was, you know, the given, but this was something he was insisting on. So that another time I probably have seen my dad cry. And we've just made it a tradition in our family once I had kids. And I don't think Andy had ever seen it till he was married to me, which blew me away. But yeah, so it might not be that a lot of families did this, but mine did, and it was super important, and it was a given once we started.
And it makes it, because of this later in life, I'm saying later in life for the movie, because of this later in life resurgence, it makes it now perpetual. Like, we'll never be without it.
Oh, 100%.
Look, Daddy, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
That's right. That's right.
Attaboy, Clarence. I kind of took Carolyn's advice, what she usually does when we have to pick a favorite song. I had to set some guidelines, some you know, parameters. It had to be one that didn't make me sad. Oh. And Frosty or The Grinch, which I do love, I almost dreaded watching those every year because I got so sad. Even though, like, The Grinch ends happy, I couldn't stand him going and taking all the presents and little Cindy Lou. Like, what are you doing? What's Santa Claus doing? And then don't even get me started on Frosty.
Oh, yeah.
No, you know, right. Like the melting
Hard
of Karen
no.
and the, yeah.
With her mittens on her face.
And it had to.
The mittens on her
I
face.
Can't,
just the image
I can't,
of it kill
no.
me.
She's so cute and she's so sad. Mm-hmm. And the show had to be one that I honestly don't think I ever missed, like that one day a year. Mm-hmm. I'm talking in my childhood, mm-hmm. 70s and 80s. So my pick is Rudolph. And that's because I feel like the characters and much of the dialogue is embedded in my brain. Like, you guys, I don't even know how many times I have said, eat, Papa, eat, when I was trying to get my kids to eat when they were little.
Right?
I would say that to them all the time. Eat, Papa, eat. Or I'm cute. I'm cute. She says that I'm cute. You know, and we jump and we, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, to your point about shows that made you sad, Rudolph made me really sad throughout, like,
did the it? Island of Misfit Toys.
Well, that mm-hmm. for sure. And the bullying.
Yeah, but they get to parachute down to.
I know. But the, oh, you know, when yeah, he was so bullied just by those mean guys and, you know, Clarice and that. And even the coach guy was so mean to him. And anyway,
he's so mean.
Like, scary.
Well, I find fault with all of the Rankin Bass. And when I say fault, I mean things that as a child I didn't like. Like, I'm not a huge fan of Yukon Cornelius and Rudolph. And you know, the Burgermeister Meisterburger, I didn't like. Mm-hmm. In that's in Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Yeah. I can't.
And sometimes I get that one in Year Without a Santa Claus mixed up. But there's something in all of them.
There is.
That there's a character mm-hmm. I don't like or a character that scared me, but I had to pick the one that was constant, mm-hmm. that was, and that we always showed mm-hmm. my kids. And so that's why it's Rudolph.
My parents used to laugh at me because I said Rudolph instead of Rudolph. And I'd be like, what? What Rudolph. Am I? And I'd say Rudolph and they go, oh, I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Well, we not only asked our social media followers what their favorite holiday special was growing up, we also asked some of our notable podcast guests and friends. So stick around until the end if you want to know what specials were favorites of Sean Cassidy, Melissa Gilbert, Liz Lang, and some more.
And some more. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so fun.
Interesting. They're people just like us.
I know, stars, they're just like us.
Stars, they're just like us. They also watch holiday TV. And they mm-hmm. grew up. They also grew up just like we did.
Right. Right.
All right. So are you guys ready to know the top 10?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
I bet it's going to be a huge surprise.
I know. Okay.
No, I will say some of them are a surprise. And listeners, you should know this is coming from about 200 plus votes. Okay. I think actually if you put in Facebook and Threads, it's coming from more.
Oh, it's a lot more.
From about 300 or 400 votes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And we're also going to read some of your comments that go along with these because you guys crack us up. Okay. Ready to get going? Let's do it. At number 10, we have a tie.
I told you.
I know.
Right out of the gate.
I know. But actually, this is a fun tie.
Super
it's an interesting
funny.
Tie. It's it is apples and oranges.
Yep.
And the tie is between Garfield's Christmas and the Andy Williams Christmas special.
That sounds so made up. That's like you were writing a comedy special and you decided to put these two shows together.
That's right. Well, you guys, would you believe this? Of all the shows that had me scurrying down a rabbit hole, I never thought it would be a Garfield Christmas.
Oh,
but here we are.
You did?
I did. And I just want to share a few fun facts with you
what
because there are a lot. So here we go. So this was a special that aired in 1987. Garfield is spending Christmas with the Arbuckle family on their farm, and he is discovering the meaning of Christmas. This is actually a semi-autobiographical story that Jim Davis, who's the creator of Garfield, shares. And so it follows the character John Arbuckle, who is basically Jim Davis and Garfield's owner, on this Christmas journey. And this was actually the seventh of 12 Garfield animated specials, in case you're wondering. Right. Okay. You guys, it was nominated for a Primetime Emmy for Outstanding Animated Program.
What?
It didn't win, but it was. And let's take a second to talk about the star-studded lineup of actors who voiced this show's characters. Let's start with Garfield. You guys, this season, we learned who the voice of Garfield was. Do you remember?
I do.
No, but right when you mm-hmm. said, let's learn, I was like, oh, God, yep. I feel like we've talked about it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's like an icon of your childhood.
It is.
It is.
Donny Osmond. John Sebastian.
Oh, good guesses. No. But Kristen, why don't you share with us who that was?
It's Carlton, your doorman. It is, of course.
Yes. Lorenzo Music is his name. Yes, he's the voice of Carlton the doorman on Rhoda. All right, let's go down the list here. So there's a grandmother Arbuckle in this story that was voiced by Pat Carroll. Now, you might remember she's a famous character actor that you would recognize from appearances on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, Bob Newhart shows. You would recognize her. But I was blown away to learn that she was the voice of Ursula in the animated Little Mermaid.
Really?
Oh,
like
yeah.
OG. Wow.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
All right.
The singing
I just
voice
love
too,
that, like, by the time she got older, she had, like, this kind of smoker boy kind of Brenda McCarr. If you think about Ursula's, like, na 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 na. She's kind of like me.
She used Tampax.
Well, that's
too.
Kind of how she is as Grandmother Arbuckle, too. If you watch,
oh,
if you
well,
watch
no,
a Garfield
I'm sorry.
Christmas.
I have to say that I did not watch it. What year? Do we know what year?
87.
Yes, 87.
Oh, I was
just
so
a little bit
yeah,
later.
I wouldn't have watched it, yeah.
Okay, the voice of Dad Arbuckle was Pat Harrington Jr., better what, known to
Junior?
All of us as Schneider,
Schneider.
On One
oh
Day
my
at
God.
A Time. Yes.
Schneider was on Garfield.
He was. Now, Mom Arbuckle was voiced by Julie Payne. And you might think, I don't really know if I know who that is. Well, just listen to Julie Payne's Gen X resume, okay? She had guest appearances on The Flip Wilson Show, The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, The Midnight Special, The Streets of San Francisco. She also portrayed Buffy, one of Johnny Fever's past girlfriends on WKRP in Cincinnati. And she played Larry David's mother-in-law on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
What?
I mean, what a resume is that?
That pays the bills, right? All those
right.
Things.
This is Carolyn's happy place right here, is finding the cast of a show. These, like, people that you think you don't know. Oh, but you do.
Yes, but you do.
But
and
you
lastly,
do.
And lastly, David Arbuckle is John's younger brother, and he was voiced by David Lander. Does anybody know who David Lander
Wait,
is?
Wait, is that no. Squiggy?
It's Squiggy from
oh
the
Oh, my God!
Show.
Yay! I'm so proud
Wait,
of myself.
I'm so proud
Wait,
of you, too.
What's his name?
So, I mean, listen to that.
David
All
Land.
Those voices we recognized in some way, shape, or form from our Gen X childhood. Okay, so lastly, I just want us to know that, you know, Garfield was kind of cynical and all of that in most of his appearances in our lives, whether it was the comic strip or in any of those other animated specials. But this show gives us a rare glimpse into Garfield's softer side, because he learns that one of the true meanings of Christmas is, and I quote from Garfield, "It's not the giving, it's not the getting, it's the loving." There, I said it. Now get out of here.
Garfield said that. I am kind
Garfield
of stunned.
Said that.
Garfield
I thought you
said
were going to say it's not the giving. It's not the getting, it's the lasagna.
Lasagna.
Oh.
Guess what we're having for Christmas Eve dinner this year?
Lasagna?
It's a Garfield Christmas. We're having lasagna.
Watch Garfield. You should watch
we're
Garfield
totally
Christmas.
We're totally doing
oh
that.
Oh, my God. Just have
yes.
it on in the background.
Yes.
You would love
I'm
it.
I'm bringing
it's
that
really
to
cute.
Everybody.
It's really cute.
I love that.
Okay. There you go, everybody.
Okay. Well, I'm a little bit surprised that the deep dive you did was on Garfield and not Andy Williams
and
show.
Not Andy
I know
Williams.
How much you love the Andy Williams
well,
show.
Well, there's so many of them. It would have been hard to go on a deep dive for that. And I could have, yeah. but I would have gone on and on.
That's an episode, actually.
It is.
Let's move on to number 9. And coming in at number 9, your pick for favorite holiday special is The Waltons' Homecoming.
And that yes. was Thanksgiving, right?
And it is. It's like the mm-hmm. is it the pilot episode?
Yes, it's their
it
pilot.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, mm-hmm. we have that the success of that TV movie, as we talked about, that was often a pilot episode for a lot of TV shows was a TV movie, and yeah, that was Earl Hamner at his best with.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Homecoming. Let's not forget when we talked to Karen Grassley, you know, Carolyn Ingalls,
That's
Ma
right.
Ingalls, we have that Walton's Homecoming to thank. Possibly for her
yes.
getting the role of Caroline Ingalls. Wait, if it was Caroline or Carolyn, remember?
It still depends on who you talk to.
I think it does.
Yeah.
Because I swear she was saying Caroline, but I swear Pa called her Carolyn.
Pa called her Carolyn, but everyone else called her Caroline on the show. And she says it's Carolyn. I'm like, well, then why did Mrs. Olsen call you Caroline?
It's a good question.
I know. And I've heard a thing for everyone misspelling my name, I think. But
that's right. That's true.
That's
true.
That's from a couple of years ago, that interview we did with her. And it's worth a re-listen. And she says that prepping for her audition, she watched The Waltons' Homecoming on a real fuzzy TV, kind of mm-hmm. like it was snow. Like she had to keep getting up and like adjusting the antenna. All right, coming in at number 8 is actually one that my husband really likes and was never
what?
A huge favorite of mine.
No.
But that's The Little Drummer Boy. But it came in at number 8. People actually said that they know that that's maybe, you know, an unpopular choice, but
it's very controversial.
The animation is very cute though. Like the little boy, he's very cute though.
Well, it's claymation, right? We all love a little clay figure, even if he's beating a drum. I don't know what it was about this show, but
I just remember thinking it was boring.
I don't think I've ever watched it all the way through or anything.
Because you were bored and you turned it off.
I think it might have been one of our Christmas episodes in 2021 that we talked about the little drummer boy and a few others that are controversial choices that some people like. And I think one of the reasons we all bonded, we hated the same one. So it's like, oh my gosh, you don't like Little Drummer Boy too? You're my people.
You're my people.
That's right.
Congratulations, Little Drummer Boy. Okay, number 7, we have another tie. This time we have a 3-way tie. And you guys, it was math. It was true.
Yes.
I didn't just go, that one's one away. No, these three had the exact same number of votes. And the first one is the animated classic, Twas the Night Before Christmas, which I love how someone commented, I don't know, it's the one with the little mice.
Yes.
So we all know exactly what they meant.
I think that's what it was. Yes. But you know what? So many people spoke so highly of that one. I'm sure I watched it as a kid. I don't have a memory, but I'm going to try to find it because people, if they voted for it, they really loved it. And then one of the other ties for 7th place is Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. Now, you guys, I had never heard of Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas, so I started watching it last weekend. And it has my favorite kind of puppets, and those are little animal puppets that look like the little rats. Brian and I recently, just early November, we got to go to Los Angeles, and we got to go to Jim Henson's Puppet Up, which is on the Jim Henson Company studio lot, because one of our good friends, Susie, her husband is a puppeteer, and he's in the business, and so he does this puppet improv they do every few months at that Brian Henson puts on. And it was phenomenal. It was hilarious. You got to actually see how puppeteering works. So like all the Sesame Street skits, and you guys, we saw some of the classic Sesame Street skits that you remember from Sesame Street. Yeah, you got to see basically how the sausage is made. You got to see how they hold their hands straight up. I mean, I don't know how any of these people don't just have dead purple hands and arms because of all the blood rushing down. But the camera and the mic is way up high. But anyway, they got to choose anytime it was, you know, they were doing improv skits. So they got to go choose from like hundreds of puppets. And anytime you guys, people chose the little rats, you guys can picture them from Muppet Show or from Sesame Street or
the little
otters and even the little weasel that looks so, his little face with the giant bulby nose. I lost my mind. I was so excited about those puppets that it's actually on my Christmas list that I want a puppet. So listeners, coming next season is Kristen Carolyn and Michelle as a puppeteer. It won't just be me. It'll be my puppet persona.
Yes.
But
I'm going to hold you to it, Michelle.
Okay. I promise I'm going to learn. But Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas, that's what it is. It's the puppets and their otters. I was all in. And so all of you who voted for that, thank you for bringing that to my attention.
When did that come out? Do you know?
Because, I had it written down.
But it had to be 80s or later, right?
Yeah.
I think so. Let me look. Yeah.
And
do you guys
know why
remember
I
it?
Wasn't tuning into that?
It was right, 1977. Shockingly. So I don't know why I didn't see it. And you know what? It's very possible I did. And it's just, you know, I have a lot of memories that are just gone. So I could have seen it. Anyway, it was very cute. And we did have people, you know, saying that they have good memories of that.
Well, I'm glad that has its fans because it sounds like it could have been a real winner, but we didn't all get to see it.
Well, and when it starts, it's so sad. You know, Emmett and his mom, and you know, she like does all the laundry and they're rowing in a boat. So me now being so interested in puppeteering, my new passion, I was like, how are they? It's like real water. And I was like, wait, but where are their hands rowing? Like,
are they holding their breath?
I really need to do some more research. Exactly. No, Kristen, that's not even, don't even kid. I actually thought, are they underneath the water? Like with tanks on? But then...
Well, you know what, Michelle? You can imagine the minute you said the otter was rowing a boat that I was out.
Carolyn is not checked out. Not on board.
That's right. We're not doing that.
She doesn't like that. Okay.
She doesn't like animals who do human things.
That's right.
It's just like there's a hard line for her.
No. Those anthropomorphic things.
Yeah. I don't know how you love Sesame Street so much then. But okay. So because, you know, you've got a bird
That doesn't count.
You've got, oh, okay. All right.
I mean, well, that bird is so big. He's not like a real bird.
He's not a real bird. Yeah.
Didn't look real. Not like the rat puppets do.
Okay, this third choice. This surprises
third tie
me.
Is such a shock.
It's a shock.
I thought this was going to be in the top three.
Me too.
I know.
Tied with "Twas the Night Before Christmas" and Emma Daughter's "Jug Band Christmas" is
at number seven.
At number seven is "How the Grinch Stole Christmas."
I am shocked because I think this is one of the stalwarts. This is one that you really did get every single year, and I looked forward to that. Yes, it is sad, but when his heart grows. I just melt. And the dog where he ties on the antlers, Max with his little tied on antlers. I always want to tie antlers on my dog.
Well, that was another thing that made me really sad is how Max has treated the first half of the show. But "When His Heart Grows Big" is one of the most heartwarming parts. But also, you guys, the image of them all, they don't care. Christmas still came.
That's right.
They didn't need, you know, gifts or the roast beast. Christmas came, and then they're all holding hands, and then they include the Grinch in their song circle.
Well, I think I grew to love it, but if you had asked me, I don't think I watched it that much when I was a kid. I can't tell you why, but I actively avoided it. It's not like I just didn't know it was on. I was like, oh, I can take my bath then or whatever. There was something about it. I think it made...
Well, he's scary.
Maybe it was scary. Maybe I was like, no, it is about the presents.
I'm with you, Carolyn, because when they're down there singing and it's like, it wasn't about the roast beast or the presents, I was like, are they dumb?
I know.
What's wrong with them?
Yeah.
Okay, coming in at number six is a movie, a special that was also a book, and we devote a large chunk to a previous episode about it. And I know I'm speaking for Carolyn and Kristen here as well when I say this one we love. And that is "The House Without a Christmas Tree."
I ordered it from the Scholastic Book Order.
Addie. Yeah.
And we love Linda it. Also has this one on VHS.
Oh, that's lucky.
That's
I wonder if you can still watch it. When we did this episode a couple of years ago talking about it, oh my gosh. We watched it. Maybe it was just on YouTube, but that's one of those things that you haven't seen in decades and just Husker Dude all over the place. Yeah. Like the sound of the voice and Addie's glasses and the friend and the tinfoil and the
introduction. Like, you know, they have that like, what do I want to say? Like those paper cutouts that introduce like each section of of the show and in the beginning. I mean, when I saw those, that was the Husker Dude moment for me. It wasn't just always the actual program. It was this the stuff that was in between. And then it became the scene. If you remember, it was like these paper cutouts. And then that all of a sudden became like the actual scene in the kitchen.
That's right. That's right. And for those of you that are wondering who do remember the book, like Kristen was saying, Scholastic Book Club, which, yes, I still have a copy of mine. The movie came first. So the movie was released in 1972 and then it was novelized into the book by Gail Rock in 1974.
Listen to you with the statistics and whatnot.
I just opened up a different tab on my computer.
I'll say that.
I'm so glad.
From Wikipedia.
I thought you knew that off the top of your head. I was
Did it look like
who?
I was still looking at
by
you?
By who? Yes.
Because
I
was
God.
Thinking. Oh, we're so tricky.
Pulling back the curtain on the wizard here.
Okay. So anyway, those of you who voted for that, you had big feelings about it.
Well, I remember we did a deep dive on The House Without a Christmas Tree. I mean, about some of the actors that were in it and what they went on to do and things like that. It was deep.
Here's a good teaser. How is House Without a Christmas Tree connected to Pretty in Pink?
Oh, I know.
I know you know. But that was my
teaser. Oh,
because
we did the episode.
To get
That's how
oh
I learned
God,
it.
You guys, is this your
I probably
over
said
yet?
It.
No, that was my teaser to get people to listen.
Yes.
The answer
now.
To that can be found.
Okay.
Besides out of Kristen's mouth.
Okay, let's.
I'm like patting myself on the back because I know.
You guys, I wish you could have seen her face. She was so proud. She sat up straighter. She goes, I know. I know. Moving on to number five, already mentioned.
In the top five now.
Now we're in the top five. Number five, Frosty the Snowman.
Boo hoo.
Oh, God.
You know, I watched that the other day. I had
just
brought it
just
up,
gone.
And it was without commercials and everything. And I couldn't believe how quickly it went. It was only like, it was less than probably almost 20 minutes. Like, I think how many commercials there must have been during that program, because all of a sudden I just put it on and it was over.
Yeah. That's like, I know. That's a lot of Evel Knievel. They're commercials.
They're 18 minutes, I think, is what it said after before commercials. Okay, coming in at number four. Now we're getting to the big stuff, you guys. Now we're getting to the ones everybody's been waiting for to see how does this shake out. Because everybody that's listening right now, I think, knows what the next four are going to be.
Yep.
But you don't know how they shake out. And coming in at number four, put one foot
in front of the other. And soon you'll be walking across the floor. Put one foot in front of the other. And soon you'll be walking out the door.
Are we sure that's the right one? Because I still don't even really know which show is which. I don't know.
That's Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Okay. Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And it is a good point, though, that some of these songs get mixed up. You guys remember, I mean, I know we get them confused with the songs, but Santa Claus is Coming to Town is classic. That's the toys.
Is it Fred Astaire?
Yes, Fred Astaire. Yes, that's
it. Fred Astaire, okay. The mailman.
Fred Astaire, the mailman. Yeah.
He's the postman. Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's obviously a favorite of a lot of our listeners, but maybe Suzanne has one of the best reasons for it being her favorite. She chooses Santa Claus is Coming to Town because of the young claymation Santa. She said he was nearly as hot as Disney's Fox, as Disney's Fox Robin Hood. My things for redheads started at an early age. And I get it. I see you, Suzanne.
Yes, he's hot. He is.
He is.
He's claymation hot.
I mean.
Mm-hmm. And especially with the beard. When he comes out with the beard. And I'm like, oh, yes.
That is kind of cute. Mm-hmm. Actually, you're right. That is kind of cute.
Dare we say sexy?
He's sexy. Absolutely 100% sexy. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, my God. You guys, we should make t-shirts of young claymation Santa with the beard.
Kris Kringle. When he's Kris Kringle.
Oh, he's Kris Kringle. Right.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah. And then he's got the wife. Santa. And can't you picture the wife? Like when he marries Mrs. Claus. Is she like Jane? Isn't her name Jane?
Her name
like
is
Jane
Jessica.
Jessica.
Yeah. And then her bosom gets bigger and bigger as the show goes on.
How on earth does she stand up? I mean, it's like a weeble. It's like, how does she, I guess, bounce right back up? And do you guys remember, I actually read that this scene is cut often from the show when it's put on broadcast television. But do you remember when she sings the song called My World is Beginning to Change?
Oh, yes.
You might not know, but you do know it because once it starts playing, you start singing it. And I can remember the whole little montage because she's sitting by this fountain with water and she has her hand in the water and it's a reflection on her. And it's like one of those melancholy, really slow songs like My World is Beginning to
psychedelic, right?
It is very psychedelic.
And her face is like swirling around.
In the water.
In the water.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Are you feeling overwhelmed by all of those hormonal changes Gen X women are going through? Just because those changes are from natural processes doesn't mean we have to suffer through them. And that's why Kristen, Michelle, and I love Hormone Harmony. It's a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. The three of us have noticed improved sleep quality, gut health, and even our moods have improved. The science-backed herbal extracts in Hormone Harmony called adaptogens help the body adapt to all those hormonal changes that cause those life-disrupting symptoms, like hot flashes and night sweats, bloating and gas. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromises when it comes to quality, and it shows. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds, and there are over 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony, with one of the biggest benefits mentioned being, I feel like myself again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PCPS for 15% off today.
And then if Santa Claus is Coming to Town came in at number four, what does that make number three?
Naturally.
Yes. The mm-hmm. year without a Santa Claus. We've got our Heat Miser, our Snow Miser, Mother Nature, classic.
I mean, the other one, like we said,
at the beginning, this song, though, I would argue all of the songs from the Rankin Bass shows, which are interchangeable, the song, yeah. are so classic. Sometimes you hear one song and you're like, what's that from? Mm-hmm. But Heat Miser, yes. Snow Miser is,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys, did you know that it's so classic that in 2006, they made a live action Year Without a Santa Claus?
I don't know that. I don't either.
But I'm going to tell you who was in it because you're going to be blown away. And the cast of the live version included John Goodman, Chris Kattan, Delta Burke was Mrs. Claus, Harvey Fierstein was the Heat Miser, Michael McKeon. Oh my gosh, we get another Laverne and Shirley character.
Oh, it's Lenny.
Lenny mm-hmm. was Snow Miser. And Carol Kane was Mother Nature. I mean, that to me is a perfect...
Her hair.
Yes, yeah, her casting. Hair. Mm-hmm. But it was a real dud, unfortunately.
Because nobody anyway. Asked for it. Because we
yeah,
like
nobody
what
nobody asked
know.
For it. It's right. Yeah. Kind of like, I'd like to say, some of these Disney remake live actions
yeah,
they're
agreed.
Doing. Like, maybe just leave it animated or claymation mm-hmm. or whatever. Like, don't fiddle with greatness.
We like it for a reason. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Okay, well, coming in at number two now... Two and one, you guys, were neck and neck.
Yeah,
literally, they were separated by, was it two votes? I think it was
yeah.
two votes.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Crazy.
Because that's a lot of votes. So that's mm-hmm. as close as you can get.
So coming in at number two, what's it going to be? Number two is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
I think you're cute. I can.
Magnificent.
I can.
Which makes
the number one pick will come as a surprise to absolutely nobody, even though it did win by just a hair. But it's still the obvious number one. And that is just testament to the role in history that this show plays, especially for Gen Xers. In first place, according to the listeners and followers of the Pop Culture Preservation Society, is A Charlie Brown Christmas.
Yay.
Spend a little more time on Charlie Brown. Let's get some context here because
yeah.
this is our number one holiday show of our generation. We're speaking for a whole generation here. I realize it's just the Pop Culture Preservation Society, but I think we speak for all.
I agree.
Absolutely.
So A Charlie Brown Christmas premiered on December 9th, 1965 at 7:30 p.m. and it was watched by 45% of the viewing audience that night. It was 15 million homes tuned into that first Charlie Brown Christmas. And
wow.
here's something we shouldn't forget. So Charles Schulz's Peanuts comic strip at this point had really become a worldwide phenomenon. This show didn't come out of nowhere, right? This was a pop culture moment. And after Peanuts was featured on the cover of Time magazine, Coca-Cola commissioned a Christmas special with Charlie Brown. Ah... Right? The bells ring. So from start to finish, they made it super quickly. It took only 6 months to make. The script was incredibly sparse, as we all know, and it was heavily influenced by Charles Schulz's religious background,
mm-hmm.
which the executives did not like. But Charles Schulz was like, you know, what are we even doing here, people? Like, why are we even doing this? And then to make them happy, he added some more secular themes that came straight from his childhood in Minnesota. On this podcast, everything comes back to Minnesota.
Right.
So
yes,
that's where we get the school play and the falling snow and the ice skating. They only used professional child actors for the voices of Charlie Brown and Linus. And the rest of them were just kids.
Oh,
just plain old kids.
Even Lucy.
Charles Schulz convinced the producers to use regular children for the remaining characters, and it was basically like the kids of the studio employees. They took tape recorders home to have their kids audition for the different parts, which I think is really part of the charm of the show for
yes.
us, especially like Sally, the way she's like, like we love her, right? And for Snoopy, they just recorded somebody speaking gibberish and then they sped it up. Yeah. and the executives hated it. They hated it. And they were like, we just broke it. We just broke Peanuts. But the viewers and the critics loved it. And one critic predicted that the Peanuts characters just staked out a claim to a major television future. And he was right.
Yeah.
Because that basically established the animated special as a holiday tradition. And it, what came after Charlie Brown? Now we get all the other classics like Frosty the Snowman, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. All these other shows we just talked to came after Charlie Brown.
Then I'm so glad it has the distinction of being the number one on our list.
It makes sense, right? Yeah. And I need to come back to what we talked about at the beginning, because as I'm watching Charlie Brown Thanksgiving just a few nights ago, by myself at 10 p.m. on Thanksgiving night, I am realizing that 100% of the reason this show was so beloved by us is because it was so elusive, because it was just once. And if you missed it, you had to wait a whole year for another chance. And you could just watch it the one time. That was it. That is all. So you cherished that moment. And we Gen Xers, we know every line. We know every note of that music. But truthfully, by today's standards, it's not what you'd call exciting. Right. If you try and see it through a child's eyes today, I get worried. So by our children's standards, it's kind of dull. And they might enjoy it. Our kids might enjoy it, but they don't have to watch it like we do, which is why I was watching it by myself on Thanksgiving night. It's perpetually available on Apple TV any day of the year. There's no urgency. There's no worry about missing it. And that is what elevated its importance for us when we were growing up.
Right.
And we have happy memories of those little moments of time, right? Of that little sliver of that one time each year, you're sitting there on the floor with your siblings, with your family. We have happy memories attached to that moment. And when you can watch it anytime you want, you don't make those kinds of memories. And we became, we are basically in relationship with those characters because we know them so intimately. We know not just every line. We know every facial expression, every dance move. Every sound, like when Snoopy's upset, what does he do?
You know, it's funny you say that. When we got our dog Frankie in May, she's a big face kisser. She's very affectionate and a big, and sometimes she'll lick right on my mouth. And the first time she ever did it, and now I say it every time, but without even thinking, I don't even know where it came from in my brain. I was like, "Bah! I've been kissed by a dog. I have dog germs." And I was like, "Get the Bactine. Get the iodine." And Brian looked at me and he started laughing so hard. He knew exactly what I was talking about. Like, he knew exactly Lucy from Charlie Brown Christmas. Can I just say one thing that you talking about our kids today might not really like it or they don't. My kids were never a huge fan of A Charlie Brown Christmas, which broke my heart. And I think I know why, because when I watched it again with them as an adult, after watching a lot of other Christmas movies and specials with them, probably, I was really struck too by all of the times in that special where they're just walking, and they're just walking along. You can see them. And it's just, or it's nighttime. And it's, there's no dialogue. There's no action, really. It's just them walking. And I remember watching it kind of thinking, oh, yeah, this is kind of slow. This is,
and
it didn't
worried.
Diminish at all my love for it and my nostalgia for it. But what I think it is and why I think we still love it is, like a lot of our memories that we, and things we talk about on this podcast, this all harkens back to a much simpler time.
Yeah.
Life has gotten so fast-paced and so frantic and so crazy and stressful, especially as we've gotten older. But when you can just sit down and watch Charlie Brown Christmas, and listeners, I hope you do, and instead of maybe looking at those moments where they're just walking and it's just music and thinking, oh, this is kind of dull, I think instead we need to watch that and just breathe and just watch that for what it is, right? And appreciate it for what it is. It was simple and we loved it. We ate it up.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's all they were doing was just walking along.
Right.
You
and
know, in between scenes, they're just walking.
Right, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The music, the soundtrack to that show or that program is just as much a part of it as the characters and what they're saying and the storyline. And it was a complete package. So while they're just maybe trotting along, we know that soundtrack that's playing. And that gave us such good feelings too. I mean, for me, mm-hmm. it was the entire experience. It was the show and it was the commercials, because I mm-hmm. remember when it was sponsored by Dolly Madison.
Oh my God. Yes.
And yes! That was like the only time I think of the year I ever saw commercials for Dolly Madison mm-hmm. snack cakes. And I can see those commercials just as much as I can see the show. So it was this entire experience that mm-hmm. I got, the music, mm-hmm. the storyline, the commercials, the being together as a family, the anticipation mm-hmm. finally happening. And being like right now, even as we're talking about it, I don't know if it came on right towards the like end of the school year, right before we're going to have winter break, because I just remember also this kind of excitement inside of me, like, you know, we're getting ready to be on vacation for a while. And it was this whole thing that I get only with that show, not with other ones.
Oh, that's
something
interesting.
Something about Charlie mm-hmm. Brown. And maybe it's the school tie-in. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I get a certain feeling that only I get with that show. And it is an entire, like I said, it's an entire experience.
You're right. It is so multi-layered in why it is grabbed onto us. And that was another example of where Charles Schulz and Bill Melendez, who I think is the producer of the show, wanted to use this jazz musician. And the executives are like, you want to put jazz in a children's cartoon? Are you high? And they insisted. And look at us all attached to this music.
Yes.
To me, it's like, it's a balm. That music is comforting, mm-hmm. and I love it. Also, I was going to say, you know, we talk about a lot of things in our generation that kind of provided us with a lexicon. Now, if you just say to someone, that's a Charlie Brown tree,
everybody
knows.
Yes. The first time I bought a Charlie Brown tree was in like 1991 when I had $5 to my name, and I'm like, I'm just going to go and get a little Charlie Brown tree.
Yeah. Yes. And then you decorate it. And then did you guys ever pretend? So when I was a little girl, we used to get like the little treetop trees for our rooms. And we would always, my sister and I, we would pretend we would go and just like scrub our hands
move
over
your
it
hands.
Like this. And then be like, it's decorated. Because, you know, they go like this. And then it's a perfect tree with like,
it's
you
a
know,
triangle.
Ornaments and lights.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, gosh.
So Liam does not watch Charlie Brown with me. When I asked him on Thanksgiving if he would watch it with me, he was like, I'll watch Christmas with you. He said, I'm not really into Charlie Brown. I just like it for the music. And so they succeeded in introducing jazz to a whole, like to generations of people, mm-hmm. not just to us, but our kids hold that music, even though they may not be into the show.
I love that.
I remember when I got my Charlie Brown, Vince, how do I say his name?
Giraldi.
Giraldi. It was with the Columbia Record and Tape Club. It was one of mine that I picked with my 10 that you could get when they started to do CDs. So I can see the cover. We probably still have that CD downstairs. And I remember being so excited to have that, because come to think of it, if I'd gone into a record store, I probably wouldn't have gone to the jazz section and looked through for it. It wasn't something that I was probably actively seeking. But when I saw it as an option on the Columbia Record and Tape thing, it was like a done deal. I was so excited about that.
Well, we have a couple of comments from social media that we wanted to share regarding Charlie Brown that just we thought were great. First one's coming from TXCA 1068. She says, I even came home from a sleepover one time because they weren't watching Charlie Brown.
I would have done the same.
I would
have too. And also, because this goes back to what we said, that was the one night you could watch it. So can you imagine little TXCA thinking, oh, yay, Jessica's slumber party is Friday night and there's Charlie Brown's on, because that's the only night you can watch Charlie Brown.
Gets there
and mm-hmm. they're like, oh, no, we're watching The Little House on the Prairie tonight or whatever. And she's like, oh, calling my mom.
Yeah.
Got a stomachache.
Yeah. Because I'm not waiting 364 days.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gosh, that's just a crime.
I know.
I would have not watched it. I can't imagine. I can tell you our friend Erin probably wouldn't have watched it, because she commented with an unpopular opinion. She said, I really, really, in all capital letters, don't like Charlie Brown Christmas or The Grinch. Too much gloom and negativity. And believe it or not, Erin went on to say, I just don't care for Charlie Brown in general.
Oh, in general?
That is a hot take.
But at the same time, what she says is, I understand. There is a lot of doom and gloom. That is not a happy kid. There's no way that kid would be put out there today, right? Like, no. Think about people's reaction to Caillou because he whines, right? Like,
well, and it's also true. Like I said, I didn't like watching some shows because they made me sad. There's mm-hmm. a definite heaviness to
melancholy.
The first. To
mm-hmm.
the first. Let's as if yes. if the whole show without commercial is, you know, 19 minutes. The first 18 minutes of Charlie Brown, yeah. it is a heaviness, you know, when mm-hmm. they're just so rude and so mean to him. So I totally get your opinion, Aaron. And I will say, in your defense, there were many comments under Aaron's who in support saying, oh, yeah. me too.
They're a secret society.
Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for Aaron for being the brave one mm-hmm. and letting your opinion be heard.
Christmas time is here.
That was our top 10, but I do want to list some other shows mentioned, some special mentions that I think a lot of you will remember.
They just didn't make it into
our
top
10. They didn't make the top mm-hmm. 10, no. Some of them had one vote. Some of them had a handful of votes. But I'm going to read the list real quickly just so you can hear your favorite. That's The Littlest Angel, The Gift of Love with Marie Osmond. And Timothy Bottoms.
Of course.
Miracle on 34th Street, which I almost watched last night.
Oh, I wondered about that.
Original.
I was like,
love that one. Yogi's First Christmas almost made our top 10, you guys.
No
really? It actually was like two votes away from making
I know
seven.
Somebody who wrote an entire essay about their love of Yogi's First Christmas and read it publicly. Yes. That's Jen Wittes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Jen,
her first
I need to
Listen
hear
to Your Mother was about Yogi's First Christmas.
You know what? Jen might have been one of the votes that we
sure
got,
was.
To
she
be
was.
Honest with you. Mm-hmm. Okay, Bear Who Slept Through Christmas also had a good showing in our comments. White Christmas, Osmond Christmas Specials, Carpenter's Christmas Specials, Santa and the Three Bears was another one that was very close.
That's stunning to me.
I know, I've never heard of that one, but several people mentioned it. Christmas Eve on Sesame Street, so I don't remember that, but I bet if I watched it, I would. The Ernest Christmas? I just had to put that in because it was one vote.
Like Ernest Goes to Camp?
Yes, yes, one vote. Another one vote we got was Punky Brewster's Christmas special, which I thought was funny.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
And then, I wasn't a fan. And then Muppet Family Christmas, which you guys, this week on social media as one of our posts, I am going to post the first minute of it because I started watching it the other day when I was confused whether Muppet Christmas Carol was a special or a movie. I was schooled. It's definitely a movie. But I started watching the beginning of Muppet Family Christmas, and it made me so happy. They're all in a truck. They're at Fozzie's driving. They're singing Christmas carols. So I'm going to try to capture a little bit of that and share it on social media. And I guarantee you, my husband is a huge Muppet fan. We're going to be watching that in the next couple weeks.
Oh, I love that. I love that we brought up some specials that I totally forgot about. Like, I'm excited to go watch some of these after we finish recording because I thought, oh my gosh, I forgot about that. One I didn't forget, and one that got some votes, but they weren't from me, that is for darn sure, was Nestor the Long-Eared Donkey. Not a fan. Kristen and I talk about that in one of our past episodes. But our listener and friend, Sassy, she was a fan, and she wrote this really sweet comment that I want to share. Hi, ladies. I commented that Nestor the Long-Eared Christmas Donkey always brought a tear to my eye, and here is my why. My parents divorced when I was very young, and it was always me and Mom. I was very attached to Mom and was always scared that she was going to leave me too. Nestor is a little sad, and it always reminds me of the bond that I had with my mother for the last 56 years and how important a mother's love is. I still have my mom, and she is so important to me, and I think that's why I like Nestor the best. It kind of sounds weird, but it's true. I just loved that.
That is
now
so
Now I feel
sweet.
Really bad about it. I'm going to have to go back and watch Nestor.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I love that she's so open about what this means to her, because sometimes we don't drill down far enough to figure out why we like something, and she really has, and I really appreciate that, which makes what I'm going to tell you next even more important, because we thought it would be fun to know what shows some of our more famous friends from the 70s were watching right along with us. So we asked the people that we've interviewed on this show, and I want to think about this with their answers. There's one in particular that I think will line up with Sassy. So here are some of the answers that we got. We asked Melissa Gilbert, and she said, I loved and still love Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Charlie Brown Christmas, but I was fascinated by the film Miracles Still Happen. Oh my God. Especially, I can barely even read this part. Especially the scene where the girl digs maggots out of her leg.
Nothing says Christmas. Nothing says Merry Christmas like a bunch of embedded maggots in
Melissa, I need more. I need more information. I mean, and she just leaves the comment. Like, that's her whole answer.
I think she maybe assumes that so many people
we know
also
about
love
the maggots.
It, that they would yes. know exactly what she was talking about.
Well, and I responded to her and was like, wait, that doesn't sound like a Christmas movie. And she said something like, well, it was on every year around that time. And I said, I think we might need to have you back on the show.
Yeah.
Just to talk about Miracles Still Happen, because yes. I guarantee there's listeners out there right now going, oh my God, yes, the maggots in the leg
yes.
at Christmas time.
Right. Yes. At Christmas.
Well, I did look up the movie. I'm not going to know exactly what it was about. I know it's based on a true story and takes place on Christmas Eve. So that's probably a little bit of the tie-in, but that's all I'm going to tell you because that's all I really remember.
Listeners,
but it's pretty,
please send us an email, a DM, however you want to get in
please.
Touch with us.
Yes.
Telling us, yes, I remember that, because that would prompt us. I think that would be a really fun mm-hmm. conversation to have with Melissa mm-hmm. in the coming year about that show. But we need to know that enough people have remember it too.
So designer Liz Lang, who was with us for our back to school special this year, she says, The Year Without a Santa Claus and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, both Rankin Bass. I knew every song. She says, I adored those claymation characters and the songs. Heat Miser and his brother Snow Miser were my number one faves. And you can just tell she's like throwing up that she's like, she's just yes. so excited to tell us. She's just like talking because she's yeah. so excited.
Oh, I love that. And I love, if you listen to our episode where we talked with Liz, you remember that she had a very different upbringing than many of us had. Mm-hmm. She lived in New York City, had a very wealthy upbringing. Her family had their own plane. But yet we all love these same mm-hmm. holiday yes. specials. It's just something, yes. again, that bonds us. It doesn't matter where you lived, how much money you had, even mm-hmm. what religion you are, because Liz is Jewish. So mm-hmm. it just still kind of brought us all together. And I love that about mm-hmm. these shows. Speaking of some of our friends who are Jewish but loved a Christmas show, our dear friend Pamela Bob, who you might remember is the creator of the incredibly funny and thought-provoking web series called Living on a Prairie, and she's also co-host of the podcast Little House 50 for 50. She had this to say about her favorite holiday special.
Hey, Pop Culture Preservation Society. This is Pamela Bob of Living on a Prairie. Definitely one major holiday Christmas special that as a kid was my favorite and is still my favorite. I still watch it every single year, which is A Charlie Brown Christmas. It just doesn't get any better than that. It's so sincere. It's so sweet. It's also a little sloppy. Like it wasn't, there are mistakes in the artwork. Like it's a little weird. But you can't get any better than A Charlie Brown Christmas. And, you know, I'm Jewish. So when it came to the part where Linus, you know, talks with the New Testament section, you know, that was always a little weird as a little Jewish kid, but still, like, they got to the heart of what Christmas is all about. Hello. Yeah. It's just the best. It makes me cry every time. And I love it.
Another famous person that we asked, although we have not had this person as a guest, but I hope we do very soon, that would be Greg Brady. I mean, Barry Williams. And his favorite holiday show, when he was asked, he said that it was Wizard of Oz.
Wait,
and
what?
At first, I know. And at first, it was like, yeah, Wizard of Oz. But I think because we presented it as your favorite holiday show, he remember that Wizard of Oz was out during Easter time.
Easter. Yes, Easter.
And, mm-hmm. And probably, don't we all have a little bit of Wizard of Oz on the brain these days?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. It's slapping us everywhere we look.
Right.
It's another.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about the Wicked musical. And if you haven't seen that, it's wonderful.
I just don't care what Barry Williams answered. Just the fact that he answered and knows who we are.
Yeah, I like that too.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Greg.
Thank you, Barry.
That's right.
And then, of course, we had to ask our good friend Sean Cassidy, and his might surprise you. But I want to say before I even disclose what his is, we actually did have 3 votes for this. Mm-hmm. This special as well. So he said, my favorite was Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol, of course. Score by the guys who wrote Funny Girl. And my dad voiced Bob Cratchit. So it was a staple at our house. Still love. The song, Winter Was Warm, try and keep a dry eye.
Yeah.
It's really a great Broadway-esque musical. And my dad sings up a storm in it. And you guys, this week in the Weekly Reader, I'm definitely going to include the clip of Jack Cassidy, who played Bob Cratchit, singing the song The Lord's Bright Blessing with his family at dinner, because it's darling.
It is.
And
darling.
It's such a little peppy song. And the lyrics are really, really beautiful. They're really, it's thoughtful, right? And it's something that gives us all something to think about, just like the whole play, A Christmas Carol, does. But
right.
I really love that song, The Lord's Bright Blessing. So I will share that.
I was really glad to be reminded of that special, because it was one I only saw a couple of times growing up. But it was made in 1962, and it screams 1962. It is so Technicolor, so atomic. It's that animation that is so familiar to us. It's basically like a fractured fairy tales. It's like fractured fairy tales Christmas Carol. That's what the animation is like. And it made me long for, we look at the kind of animation we have today. I long for that 1960s version of animation. I just love it.
Oh yeah.
I love it
because,
too.
Again,
yeah.
It brings those feelings back. Mm-hmm. Like when there's a scene where, you're in a theater, and so there's a play, you know, the play is going on the stage, and all of the audience members, they're just drawings. Like they're not animated. They're not moving. It's just like a sketch. And I remember when that was part of animation. It was like there were these still kind of drawings that were these periphery characters and part of the setting, and then you had the action happening somewhere else on the screen.
And so it's like they couldn't afford the illustrator to finish the like the cell. Well, one of our listeners, Connecticut Yankee 73, did say, Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol was the one we waited for all year long.
Wow.
I love it to this day and still wonder what razzleberry gravy
I don't
tastes
know.
Like.
I
razzleberry
no
dressing, razzleberry. I know.
Yeah.
I know. Do you guys want to know a fun fact? When I was researching for this, I kind of went down a rabbit hole, Carolyn, with the Mr. Magoo Christmas Carol, and I found just kind of a 10-minute thing on YouTube where they're just telling you about it. And so when they were saying basically what Sean said to us, that the score was by the guys who wrote Funny Girl, I guess at one point they were kind of tinkering around with the song People. From Funny Girl, and they're tinkering and one person singing it. And one of the, like, I don't know if it was maybe a producer of Mr. Magoo or one of the guys in charge came in and was like, oh, that's amazing. Like, yes. Like, was so excited thinking that song was going to be in Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol.
Oh.
And they were like, oh, no. We're just on a break. This is for other thing we're working on called Funny Girl. But I just love that at one point, the guy who's in charge was like, excellent song from Magoo's Christmas Carol. People who need people.
Yeah.
Well, but I want to say something quickly about Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol. First of all, I never liked Mr. Magoo. Again, I just thought something bad's going to happen like anytime now, and that people kind of made fun of him because he couldn't see very well. And at the same time, this special is so good. Like, as Sean pointed out, Broadway-esque. These songs are beautiful. The message, all of that. And yet it was weird that Mr. Magoo was part of it. It's like they must have had to throw some character that they thought, oh, people will tune in if Mr. Magoo, Jim Backus of Gilligan's Island fame, he voices Mr. Magoo. Anyway, it just to me was very at odds in some points. It's like, this
well,
is
well,
so
he's
beautiful.
Very Scroogey.
Well, and in the 60s, he was very popular. It was a very popular cartoon. And I actually, didn't you guys think it kind of still stands up? I thought it still held up today.
It totally holds up.
Well, we'll put a link in our show notes and in our weekly reader this week to Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol. I found it on Daily Motion.
Have the Lord's bright blessing, and knowing we're together, heart and hand, we'll make the whitest Christmas, the very brightest Christmas, a Christmas far more glorious than grand.
So once again, we find that our generation was the recipient of a tremendous gift. If the era of the animated claymation special was triggered by Charlie Brown in 1965, and the last one to really take hold with any sort of longevity was made in the 70s, that means it was primarily Gen X kids who watched and fell in love with these specials and incorporated them into their holiday tradition for their whole life. For their whole life. I mean, of course, they have continued to make holiday specials, but can you name any outside of this era that has stuck and become a part of people's annual tradition?
No.
It's of a certain era. It was just us. I don't even know if there's a generation who cares this much about any holiday show. We definitely have feelings about this topic, and that might be because of the unique intersection, like we said before, of what we were given crossed with the media landscape at the time. No VCRs, no DVDs, no streaming, just over the airwaves once a year, which is a great example of less is definitely more. So when you sit down to watch Charlie Brown this year, think about how lucky we were to be alive at that moment in history. Thank you for listening today, and we will see you next time.
And thank you so much to those of you who take your love and support of our podcast to the next level on Patreon. We honestly could not keep on trucking without your help. Today, we're giving a special shout out to Janine, Michelle, Dana, Mary, Daisy, Mary Beth, Kim, and Lisa. And if you'd like to say thank you by supporting us on Patreon and get fun bonus content in return, just go to patreon.com. That's patreon.com and search Pop Culture Preservation Society in the search bubble. And it'll take you to our page where you can explore for free. You can just look around. You can, see all the different levels of membership. And you can also support us with a one-time donation by going to our website, which is poppreservationists.com.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a holiday toast. Thanks to the people at the Regal Beagle in Santa Monica, California. Two good times.
Two happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Happy holidays.
Do-do-do-do-do.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates, and though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on truckin', and may the force be with you.